today we're talking about core training and the reality of core training, how most people do this thing to try to get stability or strength and balance and posture and all of these things. But what they're actually doing is probably interfering with what their real goal is. So we'll clear that up and we'll give some tips and tools of what to actually do if you're trying to accomplish what you're seeking to accomplish with traditional mm-hmm. core training anyways, all of that and more on this week's episode of
Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
Bill made an article on the UHP network and UHP Plus about using front planks and how there's really only specific instances where he would use a front plank or where mm-hmm. anyone should really use a front plank.
Yeah.
I think the fundamental issue with understanding that comes down to everyone being force-fed this message about needing to strengthen their core to have better balance or to improve their back pain or to get rid of their certain pain or movement issue, is that there's this some sort of this panacea of getting my core stronger. And we're going to keep saying this word that Bill doesn't like to use and I don't really like to
get
use
a
either.
Little bit to myself.
Yeah, the C it's word. This, right. Air quotes here, core. We're going to sort of define, we're going to try to actually give people a textbook definition of it to what they're considering and then why that sort of isolated approach and mechanistic approach is too structural reductionist and isn't really coherent with how movement works anyways. So let's talk about that first, I guess. So someone's going to be told by reading a magazine or going to see a PT or seeing a trainer that they have a weak core and that's why they roll their ankles or that's why they have low back pain or that's why their hip flexors are tight. And they're going to be given just a very general set of different types of planks, front planks, side planks, maybe crunches, maybe reverse crunches, maybe some type of roll, like get up maneuver or any variation of a plank that you can think of with the intention of taking these muscles, these isolated muscles, strengthening them, and somehow that correcting all of these distal things. Okay, so when people refer to the core, they're typically referring to the inner and outer core. I mean, I wouldn't say everyone is referring to these, but when you look at literature about core muscles, they're usually talking about the transverse abdominis. They're talking about
I don't think they know what they're talking about, to be honest with you. But
they're talking about the multifidi. Well, they're looking at the core as this canister, right? They're taking away pieces of anatomical model and they're seeing this thing that looks like a can mm-hmm. that's on the inside where it has the diaphragm on the top, pelvic outlet, pelvic floor on the bottom, transverse abdominis wrapping around the outsides, multifidi along the backside. And that's like the inner core muscles that people don't know how to use. So they're going to use all these planks to do it, to strengthen that first. So I guess what we sort of need to do is take a step back and get people to reconsider that perspective first.
Well, it's not a structural unit.
Yeah.
At all.
Right. And I guess sort of reframing that,
go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Reframing it in a way that's going to allow people to see it as so core and stability and all these words, what they're trying to do. I think what they're trying to do is give people better strategies to manage pressure. And that somehow allowing for them not to move too fast forward through space, to not allow them to compensate as much, to not allow them to rely on focal areas to move.
But that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but
they're literally saying that this is a focal area, and that's mistake number one.
Sure. Yeah. So let's jump in there.
Well, I mean, okay. There is no singular structural unit. You are a shape changing, energy transferring system, right? So they're like, okay, take away, just take things away. If I take away, I will pick on a muscle to make life simple. if I took away an adductor magnus, like literally just chopped it right off of its connection to the pelvis, you no longer have any pressure management capability. Like, and I'm not saying that the adductor magnus is like the only thing or the most important thing. I'm using it as an example. It's like, if I disconnect that, you no longer have the strategic capabilities to change shape and manage pressures. You just don't. Right. And so if there is this like singular entity, why would it be dependent on something that would be outside of that structural element? Right. So number one, this would be a new term. It's like the human is what we would consider a suspension field. And so what this means is that there is a continuous structural change within constraints. So we have certain constraints, like you can tell that we are humans, like we have certain structures, but those are just the constraints. And then within those constraints, we have certain capabilities. And what we have to understand is like all of this stuff works together. It's like, so we don't have these isolated structural elements. And I think what most people have done is they took a structural reductionist concept like abs, right? Like abdominal muscles. And they just gave it a new name because that's what everybody's thinking anyway, in most circumstances is they're saying, oh, because when do you do your so-called core training in your workout? Well, truthfully, you're always managing pressures, always in every position that you can assume you're managing pressures. So these are not specific activities that somehow isolate or emphasize this singular element. Like all of this pressure management, all of this shape change occurs everywhere all of the time. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, the C word falls into the dirty words list, because it's not helpful in us understanding anything as to how this actually happens. And so we just have to reframe this, because the stability is never the goal. It's pressure management and shape change to produce a movement related outcome. That's right. The goal is to actually produce that outcome, right? Pressure management is certainly part of it, but it would be like saying that there's no pressure management in your thigh. There's no pressure management in your arm, right? So, where's the core of the arm? Where's the core of the lower extremity, right? It makes people, they're thinking this isolative reductionist kind of concept as they're just a bunch of parts that don't influence everything else. And so it becomes misleading, misunderstanding. And the problem with it is that the prescribed solutions create more problems. You're not addressing the source of a problem. You're not providing the viable solution. And that was one of the reasons why, you know, and again, picking on a plank is actually rather easy, because it's totally misunderstood as to what is actually happening from an energetic standpoint and from the shape change standpoint, because people just assume like, oh, it's hard. Okay. Everybody says I need stability. I need core stability. And so it's like, okay, well, how can I stop moving? Well, you can stop moving in a bunch of different ways. Unfortunately, you're going to drive compensatory strategies that's going to create interference to all the other cool things that you want to be able to do with yourself.
Right. Yeah. And that's going to be when someone has like a plank that doesn't look right. Someone's sagging, someone's rounding, someone's shoving their head forward. All of these things. It's like what you're doing in a plank is you are stopping motion. In a plank done well is in a position of which there is no relative motion anymore.
No.
Yeah.
I disagree. I respectfully disagree. It appears that way. Okay. And you don't want to stop motion. You want to slow motion down. A plank is a forward projecting exercise. Now, forward in this circumstance, because of the orientation of the body, the forward is actually towards the floor. So yeah. I'm always reminded of Batman Begins when Alfred wakes up Bruce Wayne after a night of being Batman, and Bruce gets up and he stands next to the bed and he does a fall into his push-ups. Remember that scene? Okay, so that's what a plank is. So a plank is this fall forward. So it's a projection of your center of gravity forward. Right. And then the plank is the representation of how you strategize to slow down. Slow down. Not stop.
Well, yeah, it's slow down. It's a break, right?
Yeah. So, and then I use that term in the article because it provides a great frame of reference. It's like I'm trying to slow the system's forward projection down, because in that circumstance, I retain relative motions in that position. The stop is dead center middle, which is later than the representation of the plank. So, and think about this. So to actually effectively perform that activity, I have to be able to take an effective breath in, which requires that I have relative motions, which requires that I have yielding capabilities in the connective tissues, which means that the muscle activity actually has to be reduced. And I think I mentioned this in the article too, is like, so people get into this position and they think the magnitude of activity, and I'm going to pick on a muscle again to make it simple, the magnitude of activity in rectus abdominis should be very, very high. And it's actually just the opposite. Because if I have a rectus abdominis activity that is too high, it interferes with my ability to take a breath in. It grabs the sternum, it pulls it down towards the pubis, it pulls the pubis towards the sternum. And people say, oh, I can really feel that in my abs. And it's like, I don't want that sensation. I want to feel the capacity for my body to expand in this position. So we have to be very careful, because it's not the stop. It is, again, slowing the forward projection, not stopping the forward projection in this circumstance.
Right. But either way, it's if the goal is to increase someone's relative motions or to restore range of motion, the thought process of, oh, well, I'm going to get a stable core by doing a plank, and that's going to somehow unlock distal mobility.
Just the opposite. It's actually
right.
Just
so
the opposite.
Talk about that. Talk about why.
Well, bracing,
exactly.
It's like, so you know, bracing gets misunderstood a lot, because, and if you look at the EMG activities for dynamic activities, so like kicking, throwing, things like that, what you see are these really sharp spikes of motor output, and then huge drop-offs in these activities. And so what we're seeing are these very quick impulses of activity, right? Not sustained, prolonged bracing, right? Again, misunderstood as to how this would happen during dynamic movement. Because if I sustain the output, right, of the compressive strategy that they're using, you have just interfered with all relative motions. You cannot access the phases of propulsion, right? And then chances are, if the magnitude increases, the only way that you're going to do this is through compensatory strategy, which chances are they're already using. So the plank then becomes a great diagnostic, not an activity that you would want to use as a training element to produce all of these sustained bracing stress.
So let's talk a little bit about the reason why people use core training, or they think they want to use core training to begin with. So let's say they have back pain, mm-hmm. and someone told them that they need to have stronger intrinsic core muscles or something like that. So they're just going to do a lot of planks. And in some cases, you know, someone doing planks in a program might help them alleviate
if they do it correctly.
Right.
If they do it correctly.
They do it
correctly. Which is almost impossible.
You
have to train to be able to execute an effective plank. You don't do an effective plank to train, right? It's kind of like the whole running thing. It's like, you got to get in shape to run. You don't run to get in shape, right?
Right.
It's kind of like the same premise.
Yeah. So it's... The let's talk then about what the alternative things are that people should be trying to do. If they think in their mind this sort of core stability control, that what they're really trying to do is achieve this sort of pressure management strategy to delay how fast they move forward through space.
Yes.
I think, you know, the things that come to mind are, you know, teaching someone a little bit better, giving someone better strategies to interact with the ground.
Okay. Now to do that, I have to be able to move energy through the system.
Right.
Not stop it. So, you know, in dead center middle, right, when I'm pushing straight down to the ground, say if I'm walking, right, there is a moment in time, very transient, it's very quick, right, where there is no movement, but there's still a conservation of energy that allows me to move through that phase and then project my center of gravity. So when we're talking about effectively moving or, you know, trying to distribute loads, because again, somebody with back pain, you kind of brought that up. It's like somebody with back pain has trouble distributing load in those circumstances. Why would I want to freeze them into a position that teaches them not to distribute load? See, right. that I think is a perceived error, right? What I want is a system that can effectively propagate the energy through the system. That way I don't have one area that has to absorb all of that energy. And then that often results in whether it could be any structure where I would have some sort of stagnation of the energy, where I have this constant input of energy, but I have no distribution of it. Right. So it accumulates. And then that's what starts to result in all of these problems. Like it could be knee, could be hips, could be back or whatever. Right. So putting somebody in a position where I'm literally teaching them to stagnate this energy then becomes an error, which is why it's so important that if you are going to use this activity effectively, it needs to be used on someone that can actually, again, take the breath in that position. It is a representation of the capacity of the system to distribute the energy, right? Like when we talk about somebody taking a step forward and we have connective tissues that yield and absorb energy, the plank has to be able to represent that capacity for it to be effective. If it doesn't, then again, you're literally teaching the absolute wrong thing to this person, and you're potentially creating the problem or creating a new problem.
Yeah,
it's like taking a golfer with a swing fault and giving them another swing fault as a compensation for the right. for the original swing fault.
And that gets lost a lot of times, because we've talked about before, people might alleviate a symptom because they were just chasing a symptom to begin with. So someone has low back pain, they get a plank, they teach that person this crazy posterior orientation of their pelvis. They give them a really strong rectus strategy, and then all of a sudden their mid to low back pain goes away. But what you've done is create a different compensation strategy, and so that could lead to issues somewhere else.
The reason the symptom gets resolved is because you created a new pathway for that energy to travel. Doesn't make it ideal, right? It just means you gave them you did something different. You taught them to do something different, and that is occasionally the solution, but not always.
Yeah.
You know, and if symptom reduction is the only concern, I get it. I totally get it. Right. But you have to resolve what your intention is prior to assure that you have the appropriate strategy. So let me just give you an idea. So you got somebody with like limited early hip ER measurements, right? Hip rotation. And you put them in a plank position and you teach them to posteriorly orient. Okay. In that position, and they go, oh, I really feel my abs. Clearly I'm making my strong core. And then you remeasure those hip measurements, and now you have a magnified hip ER, like beyond what people would consider the average amount of hip rotation, right? That is a clear representation of a compensatory strategy that was induced during the activity. Again, it provides a pathway for energy to move, so it no longer stagnates. That could alleviate the symptom. But now you have to learn how to manage another compensatory strategy. So, you know, you ever have those situations where people might come in and they go, oh, I have this complaint, right? I have this symptom. And then the next time they come in and go, well, the original symptom is gone, but now it's moved, right? Their perception is like it was the same pain and then it moved somewhere else. But the reality is like you just created a new place for this energy to stagnate, but temporarily you provided them an outlet where it's no longer accumulating in the same place. Great from a perceptual standpoint, not great as a, as an overall solution.
Yeah. I think like just a final sort of representation. So you got, we're talking about pressure management instead of core stability. We're talking about distribution of forces and energy throughout the system as we move. Yes. Yes. So what does that look like? Like in the case of like, let's say like walking or using stairs or something like that, like what would the case be on the former case where you have someone who isn't distributing the energy well, mm-hmm. and then the opposite of someone that is, like, what are the main differences there?
Well, you have the obvious is the fact that you don't have multiple strategies available to solve the same problems. Like if you go up the stairs, you have a limited scope or what people would perceive in this case, if they're not familiar with what we're talking about, is like you would have a limited number of options as to how you would do things. So you would always use the same knee position to go up the stairs. The muscle activity, the muscle orientation would be too much of the same, right? So what we want to have is a system that has built in, we always talk about signal and noise. It's like you get too much signal, not enough noise. That means you don't have enough variation within your movements to distribute energy. So you're always using the same strategy over and over and over again. So if I was going up the stairs, I might have like a knee that approximates midline as I try to lift my body up onto the step, right? Where I don't have any variation in that circumstance. And then it's just continuous load. Whereas the people that don't typically have that problem, they have other ways that appear to be the same. Again, it's signal plus or minus that gives you this variation in how you do it, where you're not always doing the same thing. The way you could describe it, you know, in another representation, it's like if you scratch the back of your hand, nothing bad happens. If I scratch myself in 1,000 different places, nothing bad happens. But if I keep scratching the same spot 1,000 times, now I'm eventually going to break the skin down and I'm going to start to bleed. It's like that's essentially what we're talking about. It's like if we lock people into these positions and we limit the number of strategies that they have, we limit their motion capabilities, this is actually what's creating the problem. And then again, to magnify these strategies over and over again, you start to create these compensations and then you take away options. And then that's where bad things can start to happen.
Yeah. I think something that people can visualize might be if you take someone's shoes and they have a very set wear pattern to their shoes. Someone who can distribute the force as well would have a very even wear pattern on both feet.
Yes.
Versus if someone that has an issue that we're talking about where they have fewer options, they're relying on certain ways to move in certain positions within their center of gravity and their base of support, they're going to have one heel that's lower than the other. They're going to have a worn sole of the foot in one spot.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what we're talking about is learning. And there's lots of tools that you can use and strategies you can use to teach someone how to do this, like rolling on the ground, just positioning someone's foot contacts and having them do chopping and lifting activities. But that's, you know, we're talking about hours and hours of a conversation there. But the main point we're trying to get across is that planks and core exercises that are just general and given to everyone as this sort of cure all, that's not really what. You might accomplish the symptom alleviation like we were talking about, but you're creating another issue that
there has to be like when people are writing out their programs, there has to be a section that is specific for this, that it has to be static, it has to be prolonged, and it's like that's really not how we do things.
Yeah.
And you're always taking the shape and positions into account with every activity and to, again, reduce this into something that becomes strategically limiting is actually an error.
Right.
And so we want to eliminate that. Doesn't mean that you can't do this activity. Like if we use a plank as an example, doesn't mean you can't do them. It's just, why are you doing them? Why do you want someone to emphasize a strategy that will ultimately become interference? Right. If I can do it without interference, by all means, go for it. But if you can't, and the way you do this is like you follow your key performance indicators that you're using to monitor the way that people move. It's like you put somebody in a prolonged plank position and you take away something. It's like it'll show up across contexts. It's like, so you use a split squat or you use a toe touch or you use a reaching activity or any other exercise in the gym. And you wonder why that you know, these exercises either don't change favorably or don't change at all. It's like, because you're creating that scenario with all of your other exercises or something within your program is becoming limiting.
Right. Okay. Yeah. What, I was thinking about, like, do you remember, did you eat lunch at school in the cafeteria when you were?
I did.
Yeah. Do you remember do you remember some of the favorite lunches that you had in the cafeteria?
School pizza, the rectangular school,
yeah,
pizza.
I was going to say, like, it was just like bread with tomato sauce on it.
Yeah.
But something about that.
Because I live in Indiana, the tenderloin was also one of the popular lunches, the tenderloin sandwich. Yeah. Like Indiana's kind of known for that. Like you go to the state fair, you get a tenderloin that's about, you know, the size of your
and
head.
That's pork tenderloin.
Is it is right? A pork tenderloin. Okay. It's absolutely a pork tenderloin. Yes. Pounded out flat, though. It gets about as big as your head, and then they give you like a regular size bun with it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. The pizza, we always had those. They always had the ice cream cups with the wooden spoon.
Yes. We had to take the cardboard.
Yeah, you
lid
peel it off. I think they still have those.
I hope so.
I think.
It's like, come on, you have to do that.
And then we eventually graduated. I think we got like Papa John's was part of the cafeteria. Yeah, eventually.
Never. My high school years were 1,000 years ago. So
it's right. Like, Papa John's didn't even exist. You guys had like Pizza
Hut. Papa John was in high school, probably.
Yeah, you had pizza. You had Pizza Hut or nothing, probably.
Pizza Hut was about 14 miles away. I was a Pizza King guy.
Oh, Pizza King. Yeah,
Pizza King is still the best.
Pizza King's not a nationwide thing.
No,
that's
definitely
just
not.
Midwest.
It's very special here, and it is the greatest pizza of all time.
Okay, this is Bill. Bill saying this. Bill lives in a 5x5 corner of an office in Middle America and has not experienced what good pizza tastes like.
Oh, you're talking about the pizza that you like?
Yeah.
The pizza
that was Detroit style. Everyone
that
liked
Detroit
that
style?
Yeah, that's different. The pizza I like is from New York City.
Okay.